This is ESPN Radio.
Number three here on Canty and Gold with Junior on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golick Jr. and Chris Canty here, and we've got a apparently very angry Aaron Rodgers now, reportedly, that his private vaccination status has become public, even though we all know that the NFL's policy keeps you out longer if you're not vaccinated as opposed to vaccinated. So I don't know how he thought that was going to work. So we got, I'm getting sick and tired of this story already here. It is just amazing here. Thankfully, we got football on tonight. We got the Colts and the Jets getting ready to play. We got college football coming up this weekend. And that means we got to talk to Stanford Steve. You guys see him on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. He hosts Stanford Steve and the Bear Podcast. And he joins us now on the Goodyear Hotline. And Steve, we were just talking about Mike White. The Jets quarterback took everyone by storm. He's got his jersey up in the Hall of Fame right now. He's a 10.5-point dog against the Colts tonight here. Are we feeling good about riding the Lightning a second time here?
Well, there's a lot of things going on here, guys. I saw from our gambling people, they're obviously working all the numbers. But one thing that sticks out, and this is all obviously gambling Twitter, and people eat this stuff up, but since 2000, teams that are playing that just played an overtime game and are playing on 3 days of rest are 3-21. The Colts played an overtime game last week, and the Jets probably should have played an overtime game. So you have a number like that. But I, when it gets to Mike White, I think, you know, obviously, you know, Kent, you can talk about this with the defensive guys. You always want tape on people, right? How much tape can we get? How long can we dig up on this guy? And last week, when you see him for the first time, I thought he did a great job of not, taking a lot of chances and just taking what the Bengals gave him. And that equaled out, I believe, to like 40% of his targets to check down running backs. And then Carter and Ty Johnson ran wild. So when I look at him this, I don't think he's going to get rattled. I like the Colts personnel as long as Carson Wentz has his head on straight. So I think the Jets can hang around here. It's just going to come down to, you know, these guys, can the Colts force Mike White into making mistakes? I don't think he's that type of guy. I think he's a check down guy. He wants to keep chains moving and keep his defense off the field. So I mean, 10.5 points off of 3 days rest. That's a lot. I know the Jets roster doesn't compare to the Colts, but I can see the Jets hanging around this game for sure.
Oh, okay. So Steve likes the Jets in the 10.5 points. I'm just saying.
I'm not betting it, though. I'm not betting it.
So you're not saying it with your chest. All right. Well, Steve, listen.
I know there's a chance.
There you go. Steve, I know Mike Golick Jr. is tired of the Aaron Rodgers story, but I'm not. And so I got to ask it. I mean, The Packers went from being a pick 'em on Tuesday to Kansas City being a 7.5-point favorite. How do you see this game from a betting perspective? Where's the value?
I think there's value with Green Bay. My issue is, what's the locker room like, guys? Like, think about what they were going through in the short week, knowing the guys they didn't have. And it's like, holy cow, we got through that. We got a win on the road against an undefeated team. And then this happened. It's like, oh, man, we got to go back and dial it back again and try and win a game as an underdog. I believe LaFleur has never coached the game without Aaron Rodgers. On the road as an underdog. But to me, what are we going to get out of Jordan Love? When I listen to people in Green Bay this week, it's been a year and a half, but they still don't know what they're going to get. And that's tough to handicap a game when you got a kid coming into the situation who against a team who I think is pretty desperate in Kansas City. I mean, that was as ugly as a win as you're going to get on Monday Night Football. And now to come back and know that you have to win, like, I thought Kansas City was going to be able to play the underdog card all week, and now they're not because of the Aaron Rodgers situation. So I think there's value in there. I like what Green Bay has done defensively. You saw it last week. I loved how they got pressure without blitzing last week. And I think that could definitely rattle. Kansas City has to go back and try and run the ball, but that, you know, that's not what they want to do. It's not the cool thing to do. But if they want to start winning football games at a consistent level, I think they got to do that. And I saw some flashes from Gore last week. So I think it's a fascinating game. I would take the points knowing that I'm getting a touchdown there, even though Aaron Rodgers isn't there.
Ken Angolo Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to Stanford Steve on the Goodyear Hotline. Speaking of points, Alabama, 28.5-point favorites in a rivalry game against LSU. Steve, I know LSU's kind of in a weird spot right now with the Ed O farewell tour down the stretch of this season here, but what can we realistically expect from the Tigers here in this one?
I mean, so you mentioned all the goods right there, Mike. You know, and then you factor in a bye week. Like, what's going on in the bye week in that building? I mean, are the coaches in? Like, aren't they, instead of looking at film, looking at maybe some open jobs that are going to be open next year? I just think Alabama has every advantage in this. The offense is just completely relentless. They were a 28.5-point favorite last year when they went to Baton Rouge. So I just love the idea of Alabama, how they keep their foot on the gas all the time. They can beat you with the run. They beat you with the pass. And I just don't think LSU has the goods to keep up. So I think it's a high-scoring game, but I would lay the 4 touchdowns with Alabama because I know if there's somebody in the country who's a head coach of college football and can find motivation of your team being number 2 with 1 loss in the first rankings, it's Nick Saban. He's probably found every clip. It's probably most hopefully I made the board because I don't think they should be number 2. But trying to find some respect where people have said bad things about them being number 2 with 1 loss. He is a master motivator like that.
Steve, staying with the college football, we got a little ACC matchup in Blacksburg with BC getting 3 points on the road against Braxton Burmeister and Virginia Tech. Who should betters back in this matchup?
Yeah, well, see, I got this. This is in Chestnut Hill. Canty. I got BC at home. Scott Van Pelt calls it the general principle game. It's the red bandana game. If you know the history of the red bandana, it's one of the most unbelievable stories out of 9/11. And they're honoring Wells Crowther in this situation. They usually always step up and give an unbelievable effort. And that's what I expect from BC here. It's been a down year since they lost Jurkovic, the quarterback. But I think it's rally the locker room type deal here. I like BC as a home underdog in this situation. It feels like they'll be fired up for this one, knowing the season hasn't been what they expected.
Yeah, if you've somehow ever missed that story or the pieces done on the red bandana game, please go stop what you're doing. Go check it out. Really one of the most impactful things that we see in college football and a tribute each and every year. Let's round this thing out. This is an interesting one to me, Steve. Penn State, 10-point road favorites against the Maryland Terrapins. They played Ohio State close, but they find themselves unranked this week. It's been a hot and cold year for Penn State here. Do you trust this team at this point to be able to go get this done?
I do. I do, Mike, because of what I saw last week. I mean, you think about what they've been through. That loss at Iowa, where there's no doubt in my mind, I know it's been said by plenty of others too, but if Clifford stays healthy, they beat Iowa on the road. And then they come back and they lose to Illinois in a brutal game where Clifford came back early and you could tell he wasn't right. And then they find the wherewithal to go on the road and compete with Ohio State. And that offense, the way it looked to me, I mean, they picked apart Ohio State and the 3 turnovers just killed them. I mean, they were cataclysmic turnovers. So when I look at their situation here going against Maryland, who is not really good defensively, I like the matchup for Penn State here. I think Clifford plays well. And I think that defense does a good job against Leah Tagovailoa. And I like Penn State giving the points in a revenge spot where Maryland went to Happy Valley last year and gave them a dose. So I think Penn State's a good bet here.
I can say, you want to talk about Van Pelt. I had Loxley's boys earlier this season, and it is hard to walk around that facility without seeing Scott Van Pelt pop up on a video somewhere around that Maryland outfit. So he is well represented, there is no doubt, in College Park. Steve, we appreciate you, buddy. Always a pleasure checking in, and we'll talk to you next week. All right, man?
All right, fellas. I appreciate you.
Stanford Steve, co-host of Stanford Steve and the Bear Podcast. I'm not kidding you, Chris. We walk into the new football facility there, and Maryland's got this brand new, beautiful facility. And on a loop running on the TV is Scott Van Pelt going through and getting a tour of it for the first time here. He seems like Mr. Maryland on that campus. I don't know if there's a next closest, most important figure out there. Maybe Dominique Foxworth. That's all I can think of.
Yeah, my boy Peter Rosenberg at Hot 97 definitely feels a way about not being included on that same level. But we know there's levels to this thing, and SVP, one of the most famous Terrapin alumni that there is out there. So,
fear
yeah.
The Fear the damn turtle. Canty and Golic Jr. brought to you by Goodyear. Making the plays that move you forward, Goodyear, more driven. Coming up next, we will get back to the story of the day, the shocking news coming out of the NBA involving the Phoenix Suns and their ownership. We'll get to that next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. After this live read that I definitely remembered we were doing right now. How about Indeed, baby? We get it. It's your business. And you want to be involved in all the decisions, especially who to hire. Then you need Indeed, the all-in-one hiring platform that makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in one place. With smart tools like Instant Match, you instantly get a list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description the minute you sponsor a job. So spend less time sifting through resumes and more time saying you're hired. Visit Indeed.com/credit. Now we can go to break on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And a tweet from our ESPN NBA insider, Adrian Wojnarowski, just going out now. The NBA has launched an investigation into the Suns and their governor, Robert Sarver, the league says in this spot. And Chris, we've been all sort of digesting the reporting from Baxter Holmes. Earlier today, ESPN NBA reporter documenting Phoenix Suns owner Robert Sarver being accused of overseeing an organization that employees described as toxic and hostile, and a report saying he interviewed more than 70 former and current Suns employees who have been part of the team for the last 17 years. Reports of him using racially insensitive and lewd language repeatedly in the offense and displaying conduct employees recount as inappropriate and misogynistic now being investigated by the NBA. And this isn't surprising. This is something that felt inevitable. It was just going to be a matter of how soon did the league come out and finally address this. And I still want to know, are we going to hear from Adam Silver and how soon on this? Because I know everyone's looking at the players and looking at Monty Williams and the Suns, but I look to NBA leadership to say, hey, this is one of your governors. The players didn't do this. The players weren't in those spaces. This is your territory as a league office and as a commissioner.
And most importantly, the players didn't create the environment that a lot of these employees are accusing Robert Sarver of creating. So, yeah, we absolutely need to hear from Adam Silver, but we knew the inevitability of the NBA launching an investigation just based on the accusations that Baxter Holmes documented in his article. So we knew that it was going to go down this road. Now, it would be my hope that we have more transparency in this investigation about workplace environment than we did with the Washington football team's investigation. I know it's different leagues, but I think the transparency is necessary in terms of being able to acknowledge what happened and move forward and make sure that none of the clubs around the NBA have a situation where you're creating this type of environment for employees. I think that has to be the chief concern for Adam Silver and for the league as a whole moving forward, because if you've got an owner that's creating this type of environment where so many people felt like they were, you know, they were a part of something that diminished them in any way, shape, or form, then something absolutely has to be done. We're not just talking about any type of sanctions or discipline toward the Phoenix Suns or Robert Sarver, but we're talking about making sure that we put policies in place and enforce those policies to protect the employees of these clubs.
Yeah, Chris, because some of these accusations were to members of the Suns leadership team outside of Robert Sarver, but they said many still felt Sarver's own conduct contributed to a culture that affected how some other managers within the organization treated their employees. And whether it is shows of racism, the use of the N-word, whether it is misogyny, women feeling like they've been treated like objects, like they're property of the owner, all of which are reported in this story, it starts at the top, and the Washington football team is the perfect reference in all this, because we know there were penalties when it came to the NFL investigation. We know that there are a lot of people that no longer work there that were a part of that old regime, that were a part of a situation where Daniel Snyder was very much less particularly implicated himself in a lot of that. There was a lot of plausible deniability built into that situation. But it all went back to, this felt like a culture that you were either coaching or allowing to happen. Mm-hmm. And we look at that situation and go, Daniel Snyder's still there, so why do we expect much more when we see these stories pop up? Unfortunately, it seems like far too often, and the only thing that gets done is a bunch of people that aren't the ones directly setting the tempo at the top get moved around, and that person still gets to remain.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate part, right? Because the employees that were wronged in these situations, they have to live with whatever took place for the rest of their lives. And it seems like it's unfair to not have a discipline that's appropriate for whatever violations that took place or that contributed to a toxic workplace environment. So, again, I will go back to Adam Silver needing to step up in front of this and have an investigation that is thorough. But an investigation whose findings are also shared with the rest of the NBA and the rest of the media and the fans, because I feel like we deserve that based on the accusations that are being made, because they're pretty damning, some of the things that are outlined within the Baxter Holmes article when it comes to misogynistic attitudes and racial slurs being used in the presence of club employees. Like, that's a problem. Like, I can't believe we're in 2021 and we're still talking about some of these same issues, some of these same attitudes being pervasive throughout professional sports, whether it's the NFL, whether it's the NBA. And at some point, it has to stop. And the NBA has an opportunity to handle this in a much different way than the NFL handled it and show that they're actually serious about changing the culture and making sure that this is not a part of their game moving forward.
Yeah, Chris, you mentioned these specific issues that unfortunately across sports have been repeatedly demonstrated to us based on the punishments we've seen are only worth punishing so much, only care about this so much. We talked to Brian Windhorst earlier in the show, who's out in Phoenix, and he said this broke and hasn't seen a massive response, hasn't seen people out protesting this, hasn't seen a rash of public reaction. And we know that could change when we hear the players and the team come out and say something. Monty Williams, the head coach, who is as well-respected a person as you're going to find in this league,
yep,
come out and have something to say about all this. But for it to kind of constantly take that, I think is the reason a lot of people, you and I included, talking about this, said that unfortunately this feels like here we go again, not in the sense that, oh, we just expect that everyone is having this done to them in these workplace environments, although it feels like it's happening more often than we would like it to, certainly, but here we go again in the fact that we don't know how much resolution we're really going to get or should even expect in this point, because sports in general has never really given us the idea that this is something that matters to them enough to really carve out the real problems in all this. So lots of this to still unpack. But again, Adrian Wojnarowski, our ESPN NBA insider, just tweeting that the NBA has launched an investigation into the Suns and their owner, Robert Sarver, according to league sources. We will get to plenty more on that and keep you up to date to information as it becomes available to us. But coming up next, we will look forward towards the NFL weekend, that is, and more of what to do with one of the biggest personnel decisions hanging in the balance in the NFL right now. That's next here after this word from Wendy's. Right now at Wendy's. See what all the hype's about with our new guaranteed hot and crispy fries. We're talking real natural cut potatoes, perfectly sprinkled in sea salt, guaranteed to be hot and crispy down to the last fry, or we'll replace them. These aren't just typical fries you add to a meal. These are fries worth adding a meal to. Abandon the old, cold, and soggy and head to Wendy's today, where your fries are guaranteed to be hot and crispy at participating U.S. Wendy's. Talk to Lewis Riddick next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Danny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golick Jr. and Chris Canty. And with so much going on in the NFL, and certainly with all the drama in Cleveland unfolding around their star wide receiver, Odell Beckham Jr., we got to head to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to our ESPN Monday Night Football analyst, former NFL player and front office executive, Lewis Riddick, joining us now on the Goodyear Hotline. And Lewis, Odell Beckham Jr. now excused from practice for a second straight day here. If you're in that Cleveland front office, what's the best case scenario for them from this point forward?
I think the best case scenario, Mike, is to move on. It's now about just finding the right time to do that. And whether that means doing it immediately,
you know, before this week is over, or waiting until next week, since I believe it's Thursday now. So I think they're already going to pay him for this week, I believe. And do you go ahead and make that in the short term here, make that move to go ahead and put him on the waiver wire and release him and see if some other team will assume the remaining prorated portion of his salary for 2021. And then, you know, then he can decide what's best for him next year. I just think it's going to be an addition by subtraction thing for them and for him. And by subtraction for him, obviously, that means just, you know, pulling the plug there and going somewhere else where he can maybe, I don't know. I've heard reports about the fact that, you know, I think people feel as though a lot of what has happened there has been his lack of availability and time spent with Baker in order to really build the kind of chemistry that's needed, particularly in the off season, and some of that's been because he's been hurt and trying to rehab. And you know, maybe he can do that and really make a conscious effort to do that with his next team. For Cleveland, look, they made it almost to the AFC Championship game last year without him. And honestly, the offense worked better without him. So, I mean, I don't really see whereas they lose something significant on the football field other than his quote-unquote potential, because the reality is he didn't help them get as far as they got last year. So I think it's just best for both parties to move on.
Lewis, a part of the fallout from the Aaron Rodgers story is Jordan Love getting his first career start. How much pressure is on him in your mind, and what do you expect to see from him on Sunday against the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah, I don't know, Chris, whether or not there's a whole lot of pressure on him or not. I mean, I guess I can't really really quantify it other than to say I think for a guy who the organization moved up and back into the first round in order to draft, it obviously would be better for him to have a solid performance. I don't think expectations can be, you know, that of he needs to have a spectacular performance, but I think solid. Something where it's an obvious run-centric type of game plan. They get him some quick early completions as far as, you know, utilizing screens, three-step passing game, so he can kind of see the ball go through the hoop, to use a basketball analogy, and then hit some shots against, you know, a porous Kansas City defense that really has been vulnerable to play-action passes, which in Matt LaFleur's type of system, they have a ton of them. They have a ton of them that they can dial up. And if you can do that, and maybe it sets the table for them to feel much better heading into 2022, assuming Aaron's not going to be a part of the team next year. So I think that's the best-case scenario. You know what it's like down in Kansas City. You guys both know what it's like down there in that stadium. I mean, it's wild now. It'll be bigger than anything he's been involved in his career so far, by far. But what a freaking great opportunity for him, though, to really allow himself to gain some confidence and the organization to gain some confidence as it relates to 2022, for sure.
Lewis, you also know a lot about Kansas City. You guys were just there Monday Night Football with the Giants and the Kansas City Chiefs, and we saw a Chiefs win, but another lackluster performance, what felt like all around for that team here. I know the defense has some systemic issues there, personnel issues, but offensively, what have you seen that's really been at the crux of a lot of their inconsistency this season?
Well, I think a lot of it, Mike, has been things that, quite honestly, coaches can't control, all right? And coaches don't coach penalties. Coaches don't coach turnovers. There's nowhere that any of us have been where they say, here, in this case, grab hold of the guy and commit a 10-yard penalty. Hey, why don't you jump off sides here? Or why don't you throw the ball to the other team there? That's not how they coach. So a lot of this has been player-driven. And you know what it means to be dialed in and be aware of the fact that you can't afford to take risks with the football when you're a primary ball handler, whether it be the quarterback, the center and the quarterback center exchange paradigm, whether it be the running back carrying the ball or as a receiver catching it. You need to be ball secure. You need to understand what that means. And that has been at the crux of their problem from the get-go, the absolute get-go down there. And then when it relates to, as it relates to the passing game, you know, overall, it's been a little bit of everything. It's been Patrick's mechanics in the pocket. It's been his decision-making as far as predetermining where he wants to go with the football instead of reading out the coverage, especially when teams have been playing him in this soft two-shell. He's admitted he's gotten impatient. He's admitted he wants to hit the big plays. He's admitted that he said, look, even though I have a check down here and I can take this profit and take this 4 or 5 yard gain, I want to hit the big one. I want to push it down the field to Tyreek and Travis. And that has not always worked for him. So he's going to have to change his approach. And the running game overall, as far as play call, is going to have to be a bigger part of what they do. It just is, man. Because teams are giving it to them. It's going to be a matter of whether or not they want to take it. And they did it for a while in the first half against the Giants. You saw it worked beautifully. They drove the ball right down the field and scored running the football. The question is, overall as an organization, is that who they really want to become? Do they want it to look like that? Because that's not their DNA. And sometimes it's hard for people to accept that. We may have seen, as hard as this is to admit and to say, we may have seen the last of the high-flying Chiefs offense where it's just bombs away, bombs away, bombs away. Because teams are saying, the hell with that. We're not letting you do that to us anymore. We're just not letting. If we have to sit these safeties back 30 yards, you're not throwing the ball over our head. Let's see if you. We're daring you to change who you are and run the football more and take the short intermediate passing game. We're going to see who's going to win out on this one.
Lewis, I live in the New York City area, and the whole buzz the entire week has been about Mike White and what he did in upsetting the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, I hate to play the what-if game, but if he goes out and plays really well tonight against the Indianapolis Colts, how would you handle the Jets quarterback situation moving forward?
Yeah, man, look, I think it is a good question. I think the reality is, you know, Zach Wilson is the future there. You can't pull the plug on him based off of an injury and him being in his rookie season and him just really trying to get settled in as the franchise quarterback, where he felt as though the weight of not only that organization but the city was on his shoulders. I mean, Mike White comes in, he doesn't have nothing to lose, nothing. Nothing. If he goes out and bombs, people expected him to bomb. If he goes out and throw, has an average game, people go, well, you know, that's good. Now when he goes out and does like he does now, it changes people's short-term thinking. And I get it that people are kind of getting caught up after one game, although it was a good game, because they've been so starved for this kind of excitement, especially coming from the quarterback position. They've been starved for it, and they don't really care where they get it from. But the reality is, you invested a second overall draft pick, second overall in a quarterback. You can't pull the plug on him yet. I don't care how good Mike White plays. I just don't care how good he plays. You cannot pull the plug on him just like that. I mean, it would absolutely – that would be a tough one to stomach. I mean, it's just – I just don't see how they can arrive at that decision. Although this would be a nice story and a good problem – well, it's really not a problem. It'd be great for their overall program build to have two young quarterbacks who they know they can play and win with. That's never an issue. That's never a problem to have. So let's just see how he performs tonight. If he goes out and puts together another great performance like he did against Cincinnati, against a game Indianapolis defense, then, you know, again, I don't think the Zach Wilson era is over. But there's no question, I think, for Zach and for the rest of the organization, it would behoove them to get Zach going and get him playing much better, considering the fact that Mike White came in and kind of took this thing by storm. And you got to figure out, like, what's happening here? Like, why? What's the differences between the two? We need to get Zach playing like this as well.
At the very least, Mike White has made this situation uncomfortable. And we all know everyone's looking for the backup quarterback as their favorite guy in town. That status has no doubt been unlocked. Lewis, we always appreciate catching up with you. Thanks so much, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon.
You got it. Thanks a lot.
Lewis Riddick, our Monday Night Football analyst, joining us on the Goodyear Hotline here. And Chris, you could tell he was feeling it there at the end.
Mike,
here.
I've never heard Lewis Riddick like that before. And that just shows you how hard this call is going to be for Rob Saleh if Mike White continues to play at the level that we saw him on Sunday. I don't know if I can expect that, but if that happens tonight, it just shows you how tough of a decision it is to try to handle who's going to be your starting quarterback moving forward.
Yeah, the reality of Zach Wilson being on the hot seat. Let's stick with that coming up next, because we do this with coaches all the time. Let's try and figure out if Zach Wilson is one of a few quarterbacks who may not be the guy for their team in 2022, next on ESPN Radio. Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Our thanks to ESPN NFL front office insider and Monday Night Football analyst Lewis Riddick for stopping by with us in the last segment. And Chris, you and I were both pretty stunned because we were asking Lewis about what happens tonight with Mike White and the Jets if he goes out and plays well again, better than we've seen Zach Wilson, their number two overall pick. And mm-hmm. he was hemming and hawing on that in a way that felt like on one side you had Lewis the player, and on the other side you had Lewis the former front office executive here trying to go in back and forth between little devil and angel.
And you know how the player gets down, Mike. It's all about who helps me win, who helps me in terms of being able to get my job done and have our team, you know, moving in the direction that you want it to be going in. And right now you have to say it's Mike White. Like, at no point this season have we seen Zach Wilson play up to the level that Mike White did on Sunday against the Cincinnati Bengals. So if you're a guy in that locker room right now, I mean, you have a lot of confidence in Mike White moving forward because you've seen the actual production on the field. Tom Coughlin used to say this all the time. Confidence comes from demonstrated performance. Right now, if you're in that Jets locker room, you got more confidence in Mike White than you do Zach Wilson. Doesn't mean that's how it's always going to be, but just based on what we've seen from Mike White in a game and a half, that's got to be how Jets players are feeling. And Rob Saleh's comments and leaving the door open for Mike White to continue to start make it feel like he's aware of that situation. So that's why it's going to get sticky in terms of how the Jets organization handles the quarterback position moving forward, because coming into the season, the entire year was all about the development of Zach Wilson, and now it seems like that's gotten sidetracked for the Mike White train.
Yeah, I don't think this ultimately ends up with Mike White having the job, but I think this indicates to me Rob Saleh's response. This went a lot worse with Zach Wilson than he anticipated after the preseason run that they went on. So while I don't think Zach Wilson's truly on the hot seat, there might be some other QBs who are. We do this to coaches all the time, so we might as well play this equally here. So, Devin, do we have a few quarterbacks that we can put on the hot seat here heading into the 2022 season?
Yeah, let's start with Tua. How hot is the seat for Tua?
Tua Tagovailoa. Chris, I'm going to say, I mean, the seat has got to be smoldering right now, right? I know they can come out here and say that, you know, we're committed to Tua. We were just checking about the possibility of Deshaun Watson around the trade deadline. I'm going to go ahead and call bull on that and say, if you're already shopping, that means you're already looking past this. This is like when they say a player, if you're thinking about retirement, you're already retired. It's the same with quarterbacks.
Yeah, Tua's seat is like seventh circle of hell type of hot. Like, that's where I'm at with this thing. I mean, when you have the GM of the team, the GM that drafted you 2 years ago saying, yeah, we're doing background work and investigating everything when it comes to Deshaun Watson, a player that has 22 civil complaints and multiple criminal investigations going on, like, that's a problem. Like, that just shows you that the organization is looking for an alternative, and if they're that desperate to be looking at a player that's in that situation, that makes me feel like your days are numbered. So, yeah, I don't think Tua will be in a Dolphins uniform much longer beyond this season.
All right, we talked about his counterpart tonight. How about Carson Wentz? What's the seat for, like, Carson Wentz, Chris?
Oh, yeah, it's got to be hot. It's got to be hot. I know the organization put a whole lot in him, and Frank Wright believes in him. But you're talking about Phillip Rivers, old man Rivers, a year away from retirement, taking this team to the playoffs last year. And they seem like they're a far cry from being able to get to that same spot. I mean, in terms of competing for the division, they're all but out of it. I mean, they're three games back from the Tennessee Titans, and it might as well be four when you consider Tennessee holding the head-to-head tiebreaker because they beat them twice this year. So, yeah, it's got to be warming up for Carson Wentz. And if he keeps making mistakes like he did at the end of the game last week against Tennessee, then that seat's just going to get that much warmer.
I don't think it's all that warm, to be honest here. I think the turnovers have been bad. I think this is always going to be a two-year experiment with Carson, and I think in this year's AFC, no one is off the table when it comes to a postseason run here. That much we know about this conference. So we can get to more of these quarterbacks in a little bit on this show here. Getting a little spicy for some of these ones. The Zach Wilson thing is so infinitely fascinating to me. How quickly we can turn something like this over heading into Thursday night, Chris.
Mike, real quick, though, if Mike White outplays Carson Wentz tonight, does that seat begin to heat up a little bit?
If Mike White outplays Carson Wentz tonight here, I'm never picking the Chiefs again this season. Not correlated, but somehow made sense to say here.